Les colloques du Collège de France.
I'm very happy to be here. I've received a lot of knowledge spillover from Zvi, so it's a great occasion to present this new work, joined with Philippe, Lint, and David, on transitioning to green technology along the supply chain. So green transition requires switching from in the production process from fossil fuels to cleaner energy sources, but along the supply chain, along the entire production chain, and often requires building new production capacities. The running example I'll use in this talk is to switch an automobile from gasoline power to electric vehicles. You know, we need to build up production capacity of batteries, which by itself is also emission intensive, so we need to electrify that as well. So there seems to be broad consensus around the world on the need to speed up the transition, but countries seem to diverge on how to achieve that goal. In particular, the debate is between dealing with it in a cross-sector neutral way, imposing carbon tax or cap and trade, versus having targeted industrial policy targeting key sectors. So in this paper, we're going to write down a dynamic model of technological transition along the supply chain to study this problem. In particular, we're going to think about switching green transition of a final goods sector, think of, in this case, automobile, and we want to think about the incentives and the role of policy in doing that transition along the supply chain for batteries and inputs for batteries and so forth. And so in the setting, with transitioning along the supply chain, when there's very little transitioning in the downstream automobile sector, there are very few car producers that actually produce EVs, the demand for batteries will be very low. And conversely, when battery production has been very dirty, then the benefits of switching towards EV is also not great. So in that sense, there's a strategic complementarity in the transitioning along supply chain in a sense that's familiar as in the classic big push type stories. Except the novelty here is the strategic complementarity occurs along the supply chain across sectors. And in such a setting, several new insights emerge. So I'm going to talk through these insights, give a preview, and then walk through the model. First is to implement a socially optimal level of electrification. We would need both a carbon tax as well as targeted industrial policies targeting key sectors. So uniform carbon taxes wouldn't actually implement the social optimal. Second, as opposed to big push, which suggests that the government may need to intervene simultaneously in many sectors, big industrial policy, hence the name big push, in this setting with the supply chain, we show that small and temporary subsidies or small nudges targeted to the key sectors can actually have long-run effects. So small nudges might be sufficient, big push may not be needed. That is if we can identify the key sectors. And which are the key sectors? Well, generically, it's ambiguous, but in the supply chain setting, we show there a lot of intuition in that when subsidies are limited, they should primarily target the electrification of downstream sectors, because doing so creates additional incentive for the entire supply chain, including upstream producers, to actually electrify. And we show that misdirected industrial policy, including targeting the wrong sectors or having delays, may actually permanently derail the green transition. So it's primarily an applied theory paper, and let me go straight into the model. I'm going to set up the economic environment in one slide and talk through decentralized and market structure and incentives over the next two slides before showing you the results. So it's a discrete time setting with a representative household that has intertemporal lock utility over time, linear labor supply, with some disutility coming from emissions. Clean production, we model it as a vertical supply chain with N layers. So in this illustrative diagram on the top right, there are three layers of production. Think of sector three as electric cars, which require sector two, which is batteries, as well as inputs for batteries. Within each sector, there's a continuum of varieties combined by a Cobb-Douglas aggregator, and each variety can be produced either using a dirty production process, or if the variety has been electrified, it can use a clean production process. Now, the clean production process is only available if the variety has been electrified, which involves paying some cost, some one-time cost, to enable the clean production process. And this cost can be heterogeneous across different varieties within a sector as well as across sectors. So in this vertical supply chain example, you know, the output of the final sector is used for consumption. So automobile is directly consumed. Output of any previous sector is used as intermediate inputs in the next sector for the clean production process. So output of battery is used entirely as intermediate inputs for automobiles. And this utility from emission is proportional to the use of labor in dirty production process. In particular, you'll notice that here we have assumed that the clean process utilizes a production chain, whereas the dirty process directly uses labor. Okay? The fact that there's no production chain or network involved in the dirty process is not really key. You can think of, you know, gasoline vehicles also requires gas engine and other material inputs. But the labor requirement here and the total emission involved in the process, you can think of that as adjusting for all the network content of emissions and labor requirement. But the key assumption, at least for this baseline model, is this clean supply chain, which we're thinking about electrifying, does not actually benefit dirty production. That is, gas engines do not use batteries, or gasoline cars don't benefit from a better process of producing batteries. That's the setting that we're considering. Okay, that's the economic environment. Now, in terms of market structure, we assume dirty production is competitive. And government, because it involves emissions, government may impose a carbon tax. And if the tax is Pigouvian, tax rate will be set exactly equal to the marginal density of emissions. And we're going to assume that after carbon tax, clean production is actually cheaper than dirty. So from a social perspective, in particular under Pigouvian tax, from a social perspective, clean process is less costly. Hence, it's socially beneficial to conduct the green transition. And we're going to use Z to denote the tax-inclusive cost advantage of green production. That is dirty production. On the clean side, if a producer pays the cost to electrify, the producer obtains one-period monopoly and competes a la Bertrand with the dirty producer. And after one period, patent expires and clean production also becomes competitive. So here, the key decision is then for this potential clean producer to trade off between the one period profits he's going to get versus the cost of electrification. If the profit is higher than the cost, then he would choose to electrify. So the key state variable of the model is across sectors, what are the shares of varieties that has been electrified today? Given that, producers will calculate, you know, how much profit am I going to get if I pay the cost today? And then they're going to move on to the next period with a new set of electrification across sectors. And that's the model. So we're going to analyze this incentive for private producers to electrify. In particular, we're going to calculate the profit if they choose to electrify. Now, profits have two components. Profit is the product between markups and revenue. And in particular, we're going to show you that the markup that a newly electrified variety can charge relates to the degree of electrification coming from its upstream suppliers, whereas the revenue comes from the degree of electrification from downstream customers. In particular, the revenue of battery makers depends on how many clean car producers there are. So the more clean car producers there will be, that creates bigger market size for batteries. But on the other hand, from the markup side, the markups depend on the degree of electrification coming from upstream. That is, how much environmentally cheaper or socially cheaper is a green vehicle relative to a gasoline vehicle? That depends on what fraction of the supply chain has been electrified coming from its upstream. So the two components, markup and revenue, they depend on the degree of electrification along the supply chain in different directions. So this is just to show that the markup that a sector, a newly electrified variety can charge, depends on the network-adjusted share of electrified content when producing an electrified variety in the sector. And this network adjusted share of electrified content depends on the degree of electrification coming from suppliers and supplier suppliers and so forth. And on the other side, in terms of revenue, the revenue that a sector would earn depends on the degree of electrification coming from its downstream customers and customers' customers. The more of your customers electrify, the bigger is your potential market size. So because of that, the profit rents generated from electrification of any varieties is just a product between the market and revenue. And the more your upstream sectors electrify, the higher is your markup. The more your downstream sectors electrify, the greater is your revenue. So profit depends in both terms relate to the degree of electrification along the supply chain. So that is the setting that we are studying. Okay, so what is an equilibrium? Well, given initial conditions, given the degree of electrification, then producers can calculate what is the amount of profit they can earn, and they choose to electrify, and they choose to do so if the cost is lower than the profit. That generates a sequence of electrification along the supply chain. And a steady state is one where the degree of electrification is time invariant. Our first result is for any given level of carbon tax, in particular the Pigouvian level, for instance, generically there may exist multiple steady states. That comes from the strategic complementarity. That is, if there are very few electric car producers, there's very little demand for batteries, so battery producers wouldn't electrify. And conversely, when battery producers are emission intensive, there's little costing advantage from a social perspective for producing electric vehicles, so there's very little electrification in automobiles. So there's this strategic advantage that generates multiplicity in steady states. However, given any initial condition, the equilibrium path is unique. Okay, that is, if for a given level of electrification, the model has unambiguous prediction for the path of electrification going forward. So this differs from a big push setting, and we think is a nice feature to form the basis of our subsequent analysis. That is, in big push or multiple equilibrium stories, it's often hard to think about what's the impact of policy. Economic theory doesn't have great predictions about equilibrium selection, when do we switch across equilibria. Here, because the model features a unique equilibrium, even though there are multiple steady states, the model's analysis of policy prescription is unambiguous. And the intuition for having equilibrium uniqueness comes from the fact that the strategic complementarity only runs in one direction within a period. That is, imagine there's more electrification in downstream. That immediately creates more demand for upstream inputs and creates more incentive for upstream to electrify. So the incentive propagates from downstream to upstream. On the other hand, the propagation of incentive from the other direction, from the markup, happens with a delay. When battery producers choose to electrify, they will not lower prices immediately. They still charge a markup, and prices will only be lowered in the future. So within the period, the strategic complementarity only runs in one direction, hence the equilibrium uniqueness. So given that, we can think about what kind of policy intervention may be warranted to implement optimal green transition. So we realize that after correcting for decentralized incentives of electrification on the margin, you know, decentralized incentives differ from social planners in three ways. Two of them are kind of obvious, and the third relates to the heart of the problem of strategic complementarity. The two obvious ones are, you know, social planner thinks about all the surplus it's going to create over the long run, whereas private firms care about one period profit. So there's a time horizon difference. And in addition, social planner cares not only about profits, but also consumer surplus created from electrification. So if we impose taxes that correct for these differences in incentives, still there may exist multiple steady states. That is, the first order condition in the social planner's problem doesn't uniquely pin down which steady state that we should end up with. So in this figure, we're plotting the reaction function of the optimal choice of electrification in sector one as a function of electrification in sector two, and vice versa. And the intersection of these two curves represent the potential steady states in the model. So an equilibrium may end up, you know, may transition and get stuck in a stable steady state, and one would require policy intervention to get the model, to get economy out of that steady state and move to potentially the efficient steady state, which is C. So our result is the optimal steady state can be implemented generically through a carbon price, together with a whole set of time-varying sector-specific electrification incentives. Social planner need to subsidize different sectors differently in the electrification decision, and a carbon tax generically cannot implement optimal steady state. In particular, to eliminate multiplicity, one would need a carbon tax that's extremely large, that tend to be unrealistically large. Our next point is, in the setting, limited subsidies or small nudges can make a big and permanent difference, as opposed to in a big push style setting. In particular, here we construct an example with simply two layers. So think of, again, EVs and batteries, and three steady states. There's a no electrification steady state, that is, automobiles, we only use gasoline cars, and there's no electrification in the battery production process. And the social optimal steady state, let's suppose it's full transition, full electrification in both EV and battery sector. And in between, there's an unstable steady state, which is labeled as point B here. So here, a small and temporary subsidy by the planner to move the economy slightly beyond this unstable steady state would kickstart the economy and can rely on then market forces towards endogenous transition to the optimal steady state. And what kind of intervention would be necessary? You know, the planner can choose to subsidize sector one and move the degree of electrification in sector one, or subsidize sector two and move the degree of electrification in sector two. In this example, we have drawn the figures in such a way that subsidizing sector two, even just by a small amount, is sufficient to push the economy away from the stable steady state. That is, if you move sector two's electrification beyond the x-axis of the point B, then private sector would have enough incentive to complete a green transition. So in this sense, a small and targeted nudge may be sufficient. Big push may not be needed. Now, which sectors should the government actually target? Should the government target downstream, or should it target upstream? Turns out the government should generically target downstream sectors. Now, in this setting, subsidies to electrification have spillovers across sectors, whichever sector government target. If you subsidize upstream, downstream production will be cheaper, using EV will become cheaper to produce, so there's more incentive generated. Vice versa, if you subsidize downstream, there's more demand upstream, and upstream will also benefit from additional electrification decisions. But what we show is, generically, the incentives is larger if we target downstream sectors. That is, an increased electrification downstream always raises the incentive, or raises the hypothetical profit that an upstream electrifier would earn, one for one, whereas electrification upstream raises the incentive downstream less than one for one. And this ratio of differences in incentive created by a marginal electrification can actually become arbitrarily large as the economy gets closer and closer towards having no electrification at all. So the punchline is, when the initial degree of electrification is low, the relative benefits of targeting downstream in creating additional incentives throughout the supply chain can become arbitrarily large. Hence, the planner should always try to target downstream, at least when the initial electrification is low. Now, we have shown you results with a vertical network. Results generalize intuitively and appropriately when there are multiple downstream sectors that the consumer can consume. And we're working on generalizing the analysis to an acyclic network, meaning take any two sectors, their direct and indirect connections runs only in one way, and which we think is a good approximation of real-world products and processes. And finally, the last applied theory point is, misguided policies can permanently derail green transition. So here I would just go back to the running example. You know, now suppose there are two upstream sectors, both can be electrified. So you can electrify battery production to be used for electric cars, or you can make gas engine production cleaner, and they have fewer emissions for gasoline cars. Now in this case, because gasoline cars and electric cars are substitutes, even though there's strategic complementarity between batteries and electric cars, there is strategic substitutability between gas engine and batteries, or gas engine and electric cars. So in this sense, you know, industrial policy that mistargets, that is, if it favors gas engines, if like industrial policy focus on electrifying the production or make gas cars cleaner, that may actually halt electrification that would have otherwise occurred without government intervention, therefore reducing the long-run steady state level of welfare. And also, delayed intervention may have long-run consequences, in that laissez-faire may feature excess electrification in gas engine compared to the ex-ante social optimal. So this is mostly an applied theory paper, but we do conduct an illustrative calibration using the production of iron and steel with using hydrogen as the intermediate input. And for reasonable calibration, you know, the most difficult part of the calibration is to back out the cost of electrification or the cost of electrifying the production process. For that, we use the distribution across countries of the initial excess cost of clean production versus the nth of a kind cost of clean production to figure out the fixed cost of electrifying the production process. and for even doubling the business as usual carbon prices would still entail three stable steady states. So to complete a green transition, one would need industrial policy. So to conclude, we write down a dynamic model of green transition along the production chain. We show that social optimal would involve both a carbon tax and targeted subsidies. Small nudges, small but targeted subsidies to key sectors can have long-run effects, and these local interventions should primarily target downstream sectors, and misdirected industrial policy can permanently derail the transition. Thank you.
First of all, thank you for asking me to discuss this paper, which I really enjoy. Ernst has not made my task easier, because I thought, you know, after reading the paper that there's a fair amount of complexity, I'm sure that people will need further clarification, and I built my discussion on that. But then Ernst made such a great job in presenting it that, you know, he's probably undoing part of my value added. Nevertheless, so what does this paper do? It provides an analysis of transition to green technology along a supply chain. I think this is the first paper that does this. I'm pretty sure it is. It builds on three important contributions that I think are all foundational papers. The first is the work by Philippe with Aron Simoglu, Burstin, and David Emus that was published in 2012. It's a very different paper, but it has a commonality. I think that before their work, everything was somehow framed in thinking in terms of a carbon tax. And they show that when you have a dynamic model where innovation is endogenous, the type of policy you need for promoting a transition in an efficient way requires a richer set of instruments, and in particular, carbon tax and subsidies to innovation, because you have to overcome a period of transition where you need stronger policy instruments, and after that is done, things somehow get easier. And so although this paper is very different, it echoes that idea. The second paper, it's an older one. It's Murphy, Schleifer, and Vigny, JP 1989, that actually formalizes an even older idea that goes back to Paul Rosenstein-Rodin, the idea of Big Push, and it does it through a variety of examples. This is one of the papers that influenced me a lot when I was a graduate student. And one of them is an example that is very relevant here, where there are demand externalities across producers at different stages of their supply chain. And so, if you want to make it happen, you have to take into account that there is a coordination problem that you have to resolve, and just intervening on one part of the supply chain may not work. So, I think actually the connection with what you do is particularly strong here. The third paper is Ernst Liu QGE 2019 paper, where he studies industrial policy in a production network setting. Before Ernst's paper, we had very hard time, at least in modern mainstream growth theory, in rationalizing the idea of industrial policy. We would see that in many countries, industrial policy was very successful, but most of our theories would predict exactly the opposite. And again, this was this is an idea that is echoed here. So in this model, we have producers at different point of the supply chain who face a choice between a clean and a dirty technology. And the clean technology entails a once and for all investment, so a fixed cost that needs to be paid. And after you've paid that cost, you can use the clean technology. That clean technology happens, and I will come back to this, to be actually exposed to superior. So up to the payment, that's a very, very much in the spirit of the Murphy, Schleifer, and Vigny. First you pay the cost, and now you have a better technology. It's like an investment. Now, whether you find it optimal or not as a firm hinges on market size effects. Again, memory of that paper. And that happens not only for the lowest level of the supply chain, it happens upstream, so every firm at every level of the layer faces this type of decision. So this decision to electrify entails both upstream and downstream network externalities and strategic complementarities, as it was explained clearly by Ernest. And you know, there are demand externality on the one end, because when the downstream firms adopt a clean technology, it actually increases the demand for inputs upstreams. Well, why? Let me say two reasons. The first is the way in which they actually do it, which is somewhat extreme. If you are a dirty producer, you don't demand any inputs. Now, in the example, it was always about the batteries, but in general, this is about the demand for inputs, the market size. So, you know, I would take this as a, I would read this as a useful simplifying assumption. More generally, the clean technology increases the demand because it's superior in nature. So somehow, this is more general than the actual specification they use. In the other direction, there is a cost of input effect. So when an upstream firm adopts a clean technology, the price of the input falls because the marginal cost is actually lower. But this effect, and that's a key part of their model, happens with some delay. So, and why? Well, because you need to give the incentive for this investment to occur. You give monopoly power, but then once this firm has monopoly power, it does not reduce the price for one period because they assume the monopoly power is, in fact, only for one period. In this model, we have multiple steady states, but not multiple equilibria. A Pigouvian tax on emission is not sufficient to implement the first best, and the reason is related to the dynamic structure of the model. And as they put it, there are like two related but separate aspects. The first is that actually the innovators in the in this economy are myopic, myopic in the following sense, not in the sense that they are irrational, but you know, they assume that the monopoly power lasts for only one period. Something I would be tempted to complain about, but I don't do it because tomorrow I present a paper where we make the same assumption, so I think it would be against my interest. 3 minutes, I have to be that much faster. And the second is the whole path dependence that was described. So let me say, first of all, this is a great paper. It's an important question. It produces sharp results. It's a very nicely crafted theory. As a discussant, I have to have some quibbles, and I will make it. Let me give very quickly an illustrative discussion. Imagine I have two sectors, the upstream and the downstream. There are electrification costs that are ranked from the low to high, so one is the sector where electrification cost is highest. And I propose, you know, following what he has explained, I propose a steady state equilibrium where only one firm downstream is actually electrifying. And note that that's the only firm that demands input from the upstream sector, because by assumption, the other two don't do it in the way they specified. Well, in this environment, they show there could be another steady state. Let's say that the other steady state has this feature. Everything is electrified downstream. We have more electrification upstream. And somehow the reason why we have more so first of all, the prices are all lower. There is more welfare everywhere in exposed sense. On the top of the fact that we have a clean technology, so we don't have the environmental damage. You see, the upstream firm is now the number two, has now a number three, have now electrified because the demand that comes from downstream is now more powerful than it used to be. Now, we could think, well, if these two are equilibria, why don't we have multiple equilibria? So why don't we go back here and we say, well, just by changing expectation, we change. Well, the idea here is the following. If you try to propose from this steady state a switch to the better equilibrium, and you try to do it immediately, you realize that the upstream sector is going to charge a price that is exactly the same that was charged before the actual change. And so that will not affect the incentive for the downstream firm to electrify. They will not electrify. And if they don't electrify, those two firms don't have enough demand for doing, so they don't electrify either. And that's the nature of the steady state. Okay, now my comment. Clean technologies in this model are great. They produce more powerful backward linkage. They are exposed more efficient. They result in lower cost. I would have liked to see some defense on the empirical validity. Give me 1 minute, please, of this assumption. So what if, in my example, the opposite is true? So what happens if I have in the moment in which I electrify, I still need some type of additional subsidy in order to continue to run the process because the process is less efficient. I think I can think of many examples in which I still may want to do this because it's actually a very large the gain on the environmental side. So, this is somehow the type of concern I have. How much of your sharp results are general and how many of them hinge on particular assumption of this type? And it may be right or wrong, but then you would be the burden of the proof somehow would be on you. And I don't have time to explain that in detail, but let me give you, to conclude, another possible channel to explore, which is technological complementarity. So your complementarity work entirely through demand externality, but it could be that at the different layer of the supply chain, there is some type of technological complementarity between which favors this type of transition. And again, it's another empirical question whether it's true or not. But I also feel that there is a little burden of proof on your side to defend this idea that. This investment not only is good from the environmental perspective, but it also creates these additional linkages and this market size effect. Thank you, and sorry.
All right, thank you very much.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.